counselor, someone corrects you. That's how you learn a foreign language. Anybody who isn't willing to experiment with something will get nowhere. The difference is that these things are learning experiences. That's a very good term. And they're learning experiences where the penalty is not a spiritual sin. That is, it's not a spiritual matter, and it doesn't lead to sin. It may lead to a mathematical error or bad grammar. I used to think bad grammar was sin. Now it's something commonplace. That's the way I was taught to look at language. I haven't changed my mind, but I realize today that there is a grayer area than I thought, not just black and white. Hence, who and whom no longer are used as terms as they used to be in formal distinctions with respect to case and grammar. But there are some things we have to learn from God. And the Bible gives us those things which we need to learn. And it tells you what we would say is right from wrong. Because if you didn't do these revelations, you wouldn't know, and you could physically, as we say, burn your fingers, which has a meaning, you see, that you could definitely do harm to yourself. The scripture says, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not lie, you shall not steal, etc. And so you recognize there that you don't do that. But there are other things where you learn that you can experiment with. So now I want to address some of the things which we shouldn't experiment with. First, let me say one of the primary questions that people often ask is, what is the church's policy with respect to this matter of letting land less? And in this country, of course, we have produced so much that land is being allowed to rest, interestingly, in more than one way. The government pays you not to work it, or city fathers simply allow you to cover it over with tar or foundation for building. As my wife says to me, you regularly say that it's a tragedy we're not using some of the finest land, but we're burying it under tarmac, cement, industrial buildings, and houses. She said, but the other side of the coin is at least it's rest. And we'll have to clear it off later. But that's the case. That's the reality. Anyway, the sabbatical year. The church has as a policy something like this. It recognizes the impact of the revelation of God in this matter for the good of the soil, for the good of what is raised on the soil, and for that matter, for the good of people who do farm the land. It's good to have a break in order that you can repair the breaks in the fence. In other words, the things that really need to be done after 7 years on a farm that you may not have gotten to during the previous six. And so there's also the opportunity to learn to do things that you might not otherwise have been able to do, because can't always leave the farm and go somewhere on vacations or educational breaks, whatever it may be. Now, we did not grow up in the Jewish community. We are not a direct part of the Jewish community as the New Testament church was. The New Testament church actually grew in the synagogue and grew out of the synagogue. The Church of God today was not called out in the last century and this, since the days of William Miller till now. It has not been called out, essentially, of Judaism. It has been called out of Christianity. And in so doing, there are contacts we do not have in tradition in the Christian world from which many have been called out. Become God's sons and daughters in this life. It's commonly thought that the sabbatical year is lost, and I want to at least address that question properly. the church has recognized that you were called from year to year. And we're not living in Palestine. The Jews don't apply certain of these outside of Palestine or outside of areas that once were significantly Jewish in greater Syria, parts of Mesopotamia, where certain principles were also applied where the general population was Jewish. But in any case, we are called out from year to year, from month to month, in many cases not as owners with any title, but as renters. Farmer Kennard is a renter. He didn't want to have to own that land, he just wanted to rent it to show what can be done. And therefore, the church drew the conclusion that much of our land is being bought, banks have a claim, relatives have a claim as to what you should do with that land from year to year. So we have encouraged the brethren to let the land rest or to divide the land up in such a way that it does rest, if not all at once. Because we cannot tell a man he must let his vineyard rest this year, and the banker comes out and says, if you don't work that, if you don't strangle those grapes and make them produce more this year, that's what they do. They call it girdling, strangling. A nicer word that tells the real truth. It makes the grapevine think it's going to die. So they want to produce more. New techniques they've learned, I think they have. Anyway, the banker says, you let this rest, I'll simply foreclose. Because it says that you're to keep producing. That's what the original contract required. So the church must recognize that we cannot impose on people what they are not prepared to follow through with, in the same way that the Jews later no longer found themselves in a position to enforce the Jubilee year, which would be a wonderful thing in solving most of the problems of agribusiness today. They would vanish. Nevertheless, the Jewish community has preserved a tradition, and I will merely cite it. It is understood from the Jewish community that in the Middle Ages there were Jews who lived in ghettos of Europe who lost the knowledge of the seven-year cycle, and it was essentially redefined by Moses Maimonides on the basis from what he understood of Jewish tradition, and an examination of the Jewish communities in the East that had been observing the sabbatical year and continuing seven-year patterns without the 50th year as a break. And his conclusion agreed on the basis of all the documentation available to the Jews in the West and Spain with the practice of the Jews in the East. It is therefore true that we can say the knowledge of the Jewish sabbatical year has been preserved to this day, not only intellectually, but in practice. Furthermore, there's a simple way to figure it out. Seven sevens are 49 plus one is 50. So you would have 2 50-year cycles in a century. So that's an even number. But when you have only seven, then you have 49 and 49 in a century, or 98 years, because you don't have 2 jubilees. So you drop back 2 years every century. Now, if you want to know where we are, it's easy to figure. You take a historic fact preserved in Jewish intellectual, literary tradition, and in Jewish practice, that the year preceding the fall of Jerusalem in A.D. 70 was a sabbatical year. That is the year from the autumn, end of September, early October, or for simplicity, let's say early October, in 68 to 69 of the present era. 68 to 69. So you take the last part of it, and you merely go back 3 months. You see October, November, December. So AD 69 ended a sabbatical year before the fall of Jerusalem. Now, this is in the 19th century. So 19 centuries have gone by. That means you lose 2 years every century, in the cycle of seven, in the cycle that is made up only of seven. They're 19th century. So we've lost 38 years that would otherwise have been counted. That is meaning, it means this, that if you want to have a quick way to figure, you want to know how many times 98 there have been. That is 249 without the Jubilee, because the Jubilee has never been counted from that time to this and from before then. So AD 69, we have 19 centuries. You lose two every century. There are only 98 years in a series of 14 cycles of seven. Seven times 14 is 98. We have 19 centuries, so if you've lost two per century, that's 38 years. That means, if it were AD 69 with the Jubilees, it would have been AD 1969, but there were none. So you lost 38 from the year 1968-1969, which would correspond if there had been Jubilees, but there are no Jubilees. So you subtract 2 times 19, there are 19 centuries, you lose 2 every century, you subtract 38 from 69, and that leaves you with 31. That means that there was a sabbatical year in 1930 and 1931. Now that you know that, we could add, say, to 1931, you add 49 years, 7-7. 49 and 31 is 1980. It's a simple way of doing it. So 1979-1980 was a sabbatical year. 1986-1987, that was just completed this past autumn, was a sabbatical year in the Jewish reckoning. And you go on from there. 1979-1980, 1986-1987. That's going on, and we simply say that the church has never adopted that as a requirement for everyone, because we have had no direct continuity with the Jewish community. It's always an administrative question. It's not a doctrinal question. If the church administratively were to come to a decision that we should all have the same one, then we'd at least have to have a financial base in order to enable some people to make decisions, and letting the land rest that they were unable, would have been unable to financially because they did not prepare. Hence Mr. Armstrong's decision as a non-farmer, he loved the farm, as a visitor. He said, we'll just make it simple so the brethren do not have any basic problem, and each one simply figures it on the basis of when the knowledge came to him as to what he should do, rather than as a collective group or a church or a nation. Such the state of the of affairs. Now we may proceed backward in time, and we come to some interesting things in the Bible. Let's say that we have the story both in Chronicles and in Kings. From Jewish tradition, not directly stated in the Bible, but some things of Jewish tradition have significant merit. It makes sense, and you work with it, and if it does make sense, fine. If for some reason it was a misunderstanding, then it is not something that is basic. But if you take the story of Josiah, he came to the throne when he was 8 years old. Now, we learn that later in his reign, he made certain decisions in the 12th year and then in the 18th year. In the 18th year of his reign, he purged the land. 2 Chronicles 34:8. You can also follow in 2 Kings. I'm just looking here in the King James Version. At this time, in the purification of the area of the temple that had been closed up in the days of Manasseh, they found the book of the law, and it was so shocking. Now, they had other scriptures, but apparently the circulation of the book of Deuteronomy had in fact ceased during this period, and it was a shock to find it. Now, the German higher critics said that this was essentially when the priesthood imposed the book of Deuteronomy and the priesthood on the nation for some such nonsense. Anyway, they made a covenant. And it is in the tradition that the 18th year autumn-to-autumn reckoning of Josiah the king was, in fact, treated as and understood to be a jubilee year. And now we may know when that year is, because we know that Josiah was slain in the battle that didn't have to take place, but did nevertheless, when Pharaoh Necho was coming up against the new Chaldean king of Assyria, the Chaldeans and the Medes having overthrown Nineveh. And we have, of course, the Babylonian Chronicle record that was published by the British Museum, and earlier was known, but it was really published after the war, even though it was known before, but the people didn't have access to it. And it shows very clearly that there was a potential meeting of the armies in the year 609. That is, the Egyptian army had come through Palestine in the very year that we would have expected the death of Josiah. And once we know that the 31st year of the king ended the autumn of 609, for the Egyptian army had marched through the land in 609 in the summer, and they confronted the Egyptians in the city of Carchemish on the Euphrates River. That means that we can begin the reign 31 years earlier, 609, and 31 is 640, and the 18th year would therefore be 623 to 622. 623 BC to 622. Now, that is the actual date. That is not the traditional date that the Jews have assigned it. So let me explain a little further. It is understood in Jewish tradition that the Jubilee was kept as a 50-year pattern in the Old Testament up to the time of Josiah and through to the fall of Jerusalem and afterwards, so that the story of Ezekiel chapter 40 introduces the year that would have been a Jubilee, which was 50 years later than the 18th year of Josiah. But now we have a problem. I just wanted to let you know. We do know from Jewish tradition that there was just such a Jubilee. Let's see now if that is correct from the Bible. Let us take note that in chapter 34 of Jeremiah, there was a point in time in which the rulers of the land released the Hebrews who had been reduced to servitude. But all the princes, verse 10, and all the people which had entered into the covenant heard that everyone should let his servants go free. Then they obeyed and let them go. But afterward, when the Egyptians came up and the Babylonian army left, they immediately changed their mind and turned and caused the servants and the handmaids whom they had let go free to return and brought them again into subjection. So God comes and said, didn't I tell you that at the end of 7 years you were to let every man his brother in Hebrew sold to you, which has served you or who has served you 6 years, to let him go free? But your fathers hearkened not, but disobeyed. Now this was in a year of the siege. Now Josephus says the siege lasted 1.5 years. Therefore the kings at this time, unlike Josiah and earlier, the kings at this time are reckoned according to the Babylonian method of spring-to-spring reckoning, which may be established firmly and clearly for the house of Judah at this time in the book of Jeremiah, where he speaks of the seventh month as continuing the same year. So there are places you will find now, in the same year, in the seventh month, which means that the year did not end with the previous month, the sixth year, and begin with the sixth month of the year and begin with the seventh. It began in the spring with the first month and ended with the 12th or 13th. Now, at the end of 7 years, you were to let them go. Now, this event is clearly in a year that we would define on the basis of the fact that the Babylonians were besieging them, and this commenced after the siege began. The siege began, according to the Babylonian document and the biblical record, in the winter at the beginning of the year 588. So this sabbatical year that the Jews were going to keep was 588 to 587. Now, if you also take a look at another place in the book of Jeremiah, in the same year, the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, not during the siege, near the end of his reign, but at the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, the king of the Judah, in the beginning of his reign, but in the fourth year. Now, the beginning of his reign is the commencement of it, not 3 to 4 years later. But in the fifth month, it was the same year that had been described before, where there was this transition to King Zedekiah. Now, he came to the throne at such a time in the month of Adar that his first year would have begun with the spring of 597. Confirmed by the Babylonian Chronicle, which is quite clear. It is also confirmed by the astronomical record. We don't need to go into that. If that has to be a necessity, we can do so. But if he came in the spring, beginning in Adar, and then his year, that was the second month, and he comes to the throne in first year, it begins in 597. Then he is in a year that in the autumn-to-autumn reckoning would have begun 598 to the end of summer 597. And we know that this is a year that is called the fourth year. Now, the fourth year of what? Well, what is interesting, of course, is that if the year of the siege, beginning in 588, has a sabbatical year beginning in the autumn of 588 to 587, then let's look what would happen. A sabbatical year would have ended in 587. Another one would have ended in 594. Another one would have ended in 601, 7 years earlier, see? Now, if a sabbatical year ends in 601, 4 from 601 is 597. Therefore, we know what Jeremiah is saying here is clearly that the beginning of the reign of the king was the fourth year of such a cycle, and that confirms, of course, the pattern that the 18th year of Josiah was a jubilee. Just so you have that down, it's in the Bible. You can look it up if you want to. It is not fundamental to the practice today, but I think it's important that we can say the evidence is there if you wish to look. Now, the problem is, if a jubilee was in a year B.C., 623 to 622, and then 573 to 572, when did the jubilees stop to be observed? Because there is a Jewish tradition that the jubilee was not observed after the Jews returned to the land, after the Babylonian captivity. But it was observed on a 50-year pattern. Now, let me restate that. The Jubilee on a 50-year pattern was observed all through the time, even if it wasn't always properly enforced. But the counting continued through the entire time, from the beginning of the settlement in the land all the way to the exile. But when they returned, the Jewish tradition is that no formal jubilee in numbering of 50 and 100, 150, 200 that way was observed. Now, this leads to a question. I've given you the actual dates that can be confirmed for the king. But in Jewish tradition, they have not started the biblical chronology where it ought to be in creation week. Near 4,000, I'm only giving a round figure, near 4,000 B.C. The Jews start the story of Adam and Eve with the year 3760 B.C., the beginning of the Hebrew calendar. And they made a false assumption long, long ago that the Hebrew calendar commemorates the events of creation week, when in fact the date of the Hebrew calendar reflects the reality that it took man 10 to 11, 19-year cycles to determine, by calculation, the average length of a month. And it couldn't have been determined for sure much earlier than that. All right, the Jewish tradition is not that Zedekiah was overthrown by Nebuchadnezzar in the date that I have given you approximately here. I didn't give you the date of the fall, I gave you the date of the year in which the sabbatical year began during the siege. But the Jewish tradition would say that the exile to Babylonia took place, interestingly, 70 years before the return. And they would have the last sabbatical year observed in the year 422 B.C. 23 to 22. And then they said you add 70 years of exile. That year 423 to 422 they associated with events in Ezekiel chapter 40. We don't need to turn to that now. But they said the Jews were 70 years in exile. 422 minus 70 was 352. And so they allow only 20 years from 352 to 332 for the arrival of Alexander in Palestine and Jerusalem. I'll use the Arabic term. It was in Israel in that day, for Judea. Historically, we tend to use in the Christian world the non-Zionist term. And so the Jews completely compressed the Persian period into 20 years because they started creation week with the beginning of the Hebrew calendar instead of where it should be. Because the calendar did not begin with creation week. The calendar began when man learned how to determine the average length of a month. And that took 10 to 11 cycles in order to be sure. But now this leads to an interesting question. On the one hand, the Jews said there was no cycle of 50 years after the exile. And when the Jews returned 70 years later and thereafter, there was no further keeping of a jubilee, making the count 50, 100, 150. Sometimes the Jews would formally say the year after year 49 is an unenforced jubilee, just to have what we would call a practice to remember it. But it was never enforced, and the count was only a series of seven. Now look what happened. When we get the picture, we have a situation. If it was A.D. 68 to 69, then there was a sabbatical year in A.D. 26 to 27. 27 from 69 is 42. 6 times 7, you can figure that out. So there was one in the year 38 to 37. 37 and 27 would be 64. No year 0, subtract 1, 63. That's 9 times 7. So you know that's correct. 38 to 37. Then there was another one in 36 to 135, 98 years earlier. That is, you go 100 and drop down 2. So 136 to 135. Then you would have had 234 to 233 B.C. And then 332 to 331. That year began that Alexander came and met the high priest in Jerusalem, opened up the sabbatical year, the Jews brought up the question to him. We implore that you would let us recognize the law that we regularly observe to let the land rest. 332 to 331, and then you would have 430 to 429. Then what you have would be 423 to 422. That's the next sabbatical year. 7 years coming down in our direction. That's not a problem. Because the Jews said that 423 to 422 was the end of a jubilee. That could be a problem, but at least you start numbering seven from there. But if you were to go back from the year 572, 73-72 B.C., described actually in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 40, and to come down to 423 to 422, then look what happens. You are actually counting by jubilee. But if you were to go back from 423-422 to 521-520, 520 from 572 is 52. And that's not a multiple of 7. So there is some problem in the general understanding. But there really isn't. Because people have overlooked the fact that on the one hand, the Jews said the last jubilee ended in 422 B.C. But they associated that date with the events of Ezekiel 40, 50 years after the 18th year of Josiah. The Bible was describing the year 573 to 572, and the Jews associated that with the year 543 to 542. And between there is no cycle of 7. So we have a problem of how the count continued after the story of the exile began, till it was picked up. That has become the present cycle. So let me show you what the evidence of the Bible is, because there is no way to link up the cycle of 7 with the cycle of the Jubilee of the Old Testament, unless there is some evidence in the Bible as to when the last jubilee was actually observed. Let us now look at the book of Nehemiah. How did the Jews get the idea that the last jubilee, which, if they went to Ezekiel, was clearly in the 570s, how did they come to the conclusion that the last jubilee was the year 423 to 422? Well, now, if you look in the book of Nehemiah, you discover something. You know, sometimes these books that we seldom read have some very interesting answers. And we start out in Nehemiah to make an established fact. In the month Kislev, in the 20th year, Nehemiah 1:1. Nehemiah 2:1. In the month Nisan, in the 20th year, the king Artaxerxes, same year that you move from Kislev in the area of November, December, to Nisan, March, April, and that's the first month as distinct from the ninth month, and yet you're in the same year. That means the year here did not begin in the spring. It is an autumn-to-autumn reckoning. That is the legal fiscal calendar of the Jews. Now we move along. In the 20th year, Nehemiah comes up. He describes the events in chapter 5. From the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd. There were 12 years there I was. I came up, and I saw all the things that had to be done, and so we got them working on the wall. And the wall was finished. On the 25th day of the month Elul, chapter 6, verse 15. Now you come up in the 20th year, and in the month Elul, they have been able, after concentrated effort, to finish it in 52 days. What a remarkable feat. Now the wall was built. So let's determine when this is. So first of all, we have to recognize when the king came to the throne, because this is reckoned on the basis of the reign of King Artaxerxes. Well, King Artaxerxes came to the throne in such a year that his 20th year would be, by autumn-to-autumn reckoning, as the Jews were doing here, 445 to 444. In the autumn of 445 to the end of summer, early autumn of 444. And since he came up in the period of spring to summer and built till Elul, this occurred at the close of his 20th year, the king, which was 444. That means that his reign began in 464. Actually, he came to the throne at the very end of 465, and he was reckoned as having the rest of that winter as his accession year, and the Persians reckoned spring to spring, and began with the month of Nisan in 464, and the Jews the autumn of 464, and 20 years was complete in 444. Now, he finds the records, the genealogy, in chapter 5. He writes them up so that everybody knows who should be dwelling in this Jerusalem. And he goes right on. He's the governor. And everybody is now appointed to various responsibilities. Some were assigned to live in Jerusalem. Now, when the seventh month came, Elul had just been finished, the sixth month, in chapter 6, verse 15. And now when the seventh month came, the beginning of a new year, on the basis of autumn to autumn reckoning, all the people gathered themselves together as one man into the street, and they spoke to Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded to Israel. And Ezra brought this law before the congregation, and he began to read to make them know what they should know. And he read the book of the law distinctly. Verse 8. They discovered there the story of the festival of trumpets and the story of the feast of tabernacles. They found written in the law about the booths. Verse 14. All of chapter 8 is very interesting. They had a remarkable solemn occasion and a time of great joy. Now, in this case, they were reading the law. The reading of the law occurred, according to the book of Deuteronomy, at the end of 7 years. You tithe for the poor at the end of 3 years, and then at the end of 6 years, and then at the end of 7 years, verse 10 of book of Deuteronomy, chapter 31, Deuteronomy 31:10. At the end of every 7 years, in the solemnity of the year of release, in the feast of tabernacles, that follows, in a sense, the close of the seventh year. The Jewish statement is very clear in the Hebrew. At the end of 7 years, you release people. They're not released at the beginning, but at the end of that year, from debt or obligation due up to that time. At the end of 3 years, when you finish the harvest, you bring in the tithe. So at the end of a seventh year, the law was expected regularly to be read. Now, think about that fact, because we are dealing here, therefore, with a year beginning new in the seventh month. And at the end of a sabbatical year, or a seventh year, they read the law. Therefore, the 20th year of Artaxerxes was a sabbatical year. at the end of which they read the law. 4:45 to 4:44. The reason the governor could do what he did is the people, in fact, were free to devote their time to this emergency need to build the walls of the city. 4:43 to 4:44. 38 to 37. 31 to 30. They're moving down 7 years. 24 to 23. 4:24 to 4:23. Another 7th year. But our count begins today and goes backwards, beginning with the year 422. Whereas the book of Nehemiah says it was a sabbatical year that ended in 423. And the answer to the question is very clear. Under the prophets, under Ezra and under Nehemiah, the last jubilee was observed in the year 423 to 422, just as Jewish tradition says, even if they misunderstood that that has nothing to do with the book of Ezekiel chapter 40. But they remembered correctly. In other words, you can take a cycle of 7 all the way back to the year beginning in the autumn of 422 B.C. till now. An exact cycle of 7 years. And you can continue the earlier 50-year cycle through the story of Jeremiah, all the way to the events that I just read to you here in the book of Nehemiah, and you come up with that illogical problem that the cycle would have ended a sabbatical year with the year 424 to 423, just like you had one in 445, 444, 21 years earlier. And the fact that you have 1 year in between, after a sabbatical year before the next cycle begins to count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, confirms the fact, which is therefore in the Bible, that the last sabbatical year was not observed when the Jews were taken by Nebuchadnezzar away from Jerusalem. It continues to be counted on the basis of the last jubilees, is what I meant to say. The jubilees continued to be counted after the captivity, in the days of Zerubbabel, in the days of Ezra, to the days of Nehemiah and Malachi. All the way, as the Jews themselves say, to the year 423 to 422. Even though they thought that was the story of Ezekiel chapter 40, in fact, that is not at all that period described in the Bible. That is something that took place after the 20th year of Artaxerxes. So we can say today that the cycle of 50 years was the count that was observed from old times through Josiah's day and through the last of the prophets, and by the Jews' own tradition, that ended in the year 423 to 422 B.C. And after that time, till now, in preserving the pattern of just a cycle of 7 years, the Jews have kept the count all the way to today. And this year happens to be the first of the next cycle of 7 years. 1987 to 1988, the first year of the next cycle. Anyway, it is interesting to see, I thought I should address this question and to explain what it is that we can know. Some of you might never realize that right there in the book of Nehemiah, when you get the evidence, you have a problem that needs a solution. And the solution is that the Jews had the answer all along and didn't realize it. They understood which year it was, but they made the mistake of associating it with the end of the captivity that period, the end of the captivity, rather than in the days of Nehemiah, the governor, and Malachi. That was a mistake. I used to wonder, where was the error? Was the error in the dating, or was the error in the association of the date with an event? And now we know the error was in association.